Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 431 for comics originally released on November 11th, 2015. Now, starting us off in DC is Superman American Alien number 1. And this is written by Max Landis. It's got art by Nick Dragota. For this issue, I believe they're going to switch artists every issue. And I had kind of some mixed feelings about this, a couple of questions about this. Do you know if it's, like, in continuity at all? Or, I mean, not that that totally matters or anything. I'm just kind of curious.
No. No, I have no idea if it's official New 52 universe or not.
I don't think it is. This seems to be part of their, I guess I want to call it their diversity thing. We'll just tell stories, which is fine. And I'll be honest, I wasn't entirely sure exactly what I was expecting out of this. But there was something about the way they had been advertising it, particularly with the cover, the glowing eyes, the cornfield, that whole thing. I was expecting something a little more realistic, a little more gritty, a little more dark, I guess is the way to put it. And this was kind of anything but that. This was a bit kind of whimsical and kind of lighthearted, kind of cool, actually. I mean, it was kind of what I'd like to see out of a really all-ages kind of young Superboy kind of a series. I think this Clark, at this point in his life, they could keep going with this and tell a good series. Again, not the series I was expecting this to be. So, again, kind of mixed feelings. On the one hand, it was a very fun story about a young Clark discovering his ability to fly and learn to control it. But on the other hand, I thought it was a really kind of shallow handling of that situation. It's like, well, he can't control it, and then suddenly he can. I left this issue wanting more and not, in some ways, good, because, you know, I think they could keep going with this character, this take, this style. But on the other side, I wanted more in this story. It felt light. It felt surface level. It felt lacking in some respects. And it reminded me of some of the episodes of Smallville when Clark had to learn to deal with his new powers, you know, super hearing or heat vision or whatever. But they seemed to be a little bit more substantial than this. And again, that's not a bad thing. It just depends kind of what were they setting out to do with this and did they do it or not?
I really liked it. I think I liked it a lot more than you did. I thought the art was good. I really liked the story. I thought it was a great glimpse into early Superman. And the story kind of had some very heartwarming touches in there. I really liked the relationship with the parents. And it was well executed, I thought. I was pleasantly surprised to see that concept-wise, we're going to be having 7 different artists interpreting basically 7 different glimpses into a different part of Superman's past, with some basically almost a Superman anthology in this seven issue series. So I'm kind of curious as to what else there is in the future and what kind of glimpses we got. I doubt we get another look at young Superman, and that's okay. But this was really good. It set the bar pretty high, I think, and, you know, between this and the Yang version that's out there, I'm reading more Superman now than I ever have.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really been strong. I'm really enjoying what they're doing with the character. And this issue in particular, I thought was really great.
I agree with a lot of what you said. I mean, this was good. There was a certain charm to this character. There were some great character moments. Where I thought this was lacking was on the plot. It went from he's discovered he can fly to literally just within a panel or two, suddenly he's mastered it. And there was something there that just seemed like a little bit of a cheat and stuff. But the rest of the issue and stuff, they again, the relationship with his parents, the interaction with Pete and Lana and stuff, I thought that was great. You know, like I said, they could continue at this point in this character's life for a while, and I think it'd do really well. But that's not what they seem to be wanting to do. And I agree. Again, the art was terrific. It fit the story very well. But I'm puzzled by the nature of the miniseries, because the solicit for it, has, we're going to have issues ranging from heartwarming and simple, which I would say this qualified as, mm-hmm. to frighteningly gritty and violent.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, that's a bit different.
I believe one of them was going to be sexy as well.
Yes, yes. And again, different takes on the character, and they could knock out of the park each time. But it makes me wonder if people who like this are going to like future issues and vice versa. I couldn't tell where they were going with the series. And aside from him just suddenly, learning how to fly almost instantly, which again really bothered me, because it's like that was the point of the story. He was working to do it, and while we got a little bit of that here and there, it felt too easy at the end. But
I kind of was at the other end of the spectrum. I thought, they spent a lot of time in the cornfield and, working on the truck, and like, come on, all right, just fast forward to where he knows how to fly.
And they did.
So I was on the other end of the spectrum on that.
That's fair. I mean, the bottom line, though, is it was a fun read. It didn't have quite the depth I was hoping for, but I don't think this issue was setting out to do that. I think it was setting out to make Clark a likable character as a kid and making us feel for him, particularly the bit with the movie of, are they really going to, lock up the alien just because he's an alien, kind of, what would it have been like to grow up as Superman kind of thing?
Yeah. And it'd be cool to see where they go, because in the creator's own words, number one is heartwarming. Number two is brutal. Three is sexy. Number four will make you think. Five is thrilling. Six might make you cry, and seven's the most violent fight you've ever seen featuring Clark Kent. So I'm down for that, and I'm looking forward to some of these artists. I can't wait to see what Joelle Jones does with the character in the future, but I thought this was a great start for this series. A lot of fun. I give it A-.
Interesting. For me, I went with a B. Again, I thought it was good, but they didn't sell me on the series well. I again worry about the direction it's going to take. It sounds like they've got some great artists lined up, and if they get the right artist on the right issues and the right stories and stuff, and they've got kind of the match they had here, that could work really well, and I hope that's going to be the case. I do think this is the kind of issue that could make somebody who's just lukewarm on Superman actually really like the character, and I think that's a big success in and of itself. Shall we move over to our Marvel book?
Yeah.
This is the all-new, all-different Avengers number one. It's written by Mark Waid. We've got Adam Kubert on art. This is a $4.99 book. It's, I believe, double-sized. And it's one of those things. You got Mark Waid, you got Adam Kubert, you got a high-powered creative team on this. And the question is, can they deliver? And I'm kind of... This is another one I got mixed feelings on. In some ways, yes. Some ways, no. They start with a page of two of the characters yelling at each other with Nova and Ms. Marvel, and then cut to a completely different story, and then they kind of pick that up in the backup feature. It's like, okay, odd way to start out. And then we cut to 12 hours earlier. So we've gotten, three words of dialogue, a two-word caption, and now we're already having to roll back 12 hours? That's again, a little bit of a pet peeve of mine. Just tell the story chronologically. They could have just started with this scene with Captain America and whatnot, inexplicably rescuing people. I'm willing to give superheroes a little bit of a leeway on how they choose to rescue some people. But there was something about this rescue with Falcon. A car has just gotten knocked off a bridge, apparently the bridge not that safe. And he rescues them through this falling SUV by hurling the shield through the rear windshield, front windshield, zipping through it from the bottom up, and miraculously grabbing the husband, wife, child, and dog. I mean, he saved the dog too. You gotta respect that. I just can't figure out how on earth that would have worked. And this is me, spending too much time analyzing something that is best not analyzed. First off, the shield should have decapitated a couple of people. The broken glass through the window would have hurt, too. Even if you ignore all of that, how he grabs three people and a dog that are presumably seatbelted into the car as it's falling, that was the part where it's like, wait, how did that work? It made for cool dramatic action, so I'll give them that. We get a few other kind of things in that follow-up scene with what seemed to be a kind of a shout-out/comment towards, I'm thinking Augie DeBleek in that, that's not my Captain America and don't be a jerk, Augie, bit. In joke, if you get it or whatever, Augie DeBleek, longtime CBR columnist, great guy. And it would not surprise me if at some point he had said, well, that this new Captain America is not working for him. It's not his Captain America. Which would be a little ironic because I think that's the same sort of comment Mark Waid and a number of other old school writers have said about Superman and some of the other characters that have been kind of revamped, rebooted.
It's also a running gag on the iFanboy podcast where they are using the not my Star Wars thing for some of the new interpretations.
And, you know, I get that sentiment because it's hard to warm up to some of these new takes. But when they go and make these new takes on characters, that's the challenge they set up for themselves. There was also one or two things with the way Iron Man was introduced to this issue where somebody was actually questioning if that really was Tony Stark, which got me questioning if that really was Tony Stark. And of course it was, so it's like, well, that was kind of pointless. Really, this issue or this part of the story is mainly Falcon, Tony, and the Miles Morales Spider-Man. We get some action that will presumably build up to something between the two bad guys that we see here. But as it was just almost a mindless fight or something. Again, you've got a good creative team, so it's a well-written, well-drawn kind of a story and whatnot. It had some cool moments. I loved when Tony got into his Iron Man armor. Again, a little ridiculous, but hey, kind of cool. I was just a little surprised when we got to the to be continued on the lead story. No Thor, no Vision, really no Nova and Ms. Marvel other than that first page. The team hadn't been assembled. Many of the characters hadn't even been referenced. And should we expect the team to be assembled in the first issue? I've got old school expectations. What can I say? I think, yeah, it's not an unreasonable expectation. These days, yeah, it is an unreasonable expectation. I get that. But I was expecting a little bit more Avengers assembling than we got here. But what we got had some cool stuff. And then we get the backup story, which is pretty much all Nova and Ms. Marvel. And it was more character-based. It was good. And it set up a very clear dynamic between those two characters. But one that just didn't make sense to me, given I think there's a significant age gap between those two. Because I put Kamala 16, 17, and Sam, 12 tops? And it felt somewhat disconnected from the lead story, other than those characters presumably are going to join the team. Not that you'd know that from the lead story.
Yeah, I was expecting a lot more characters in this. The first 20 pages or so, that first story, pretty lackluster. I didn't think it had much going for it. You said double-sized, and I was kind of excited, but it really an extra 10 pages for that backup feature. That backup story. And so they charge you $5 for, you know, another 10 pages. I guess that's the going rate, an extra buck, an extra 10 pages. The backup story with Ms. Marvel and Nova was really the highlight for me. That's got really great dialogue. It's got really great character interplay. I really enjoyed that. I'm looking forward to more of that type of execution. The first part, it just didn't grab me. Didn't enjoy that first part of the story at all. And then you slap $5 on it. Ugh, that's a real tough sell for me to recommend this to anyone as a first issue and to say go ahead and spring for that $5 for this enjoyable story, which was kind of a mixed bag. You know, a tale of two halves, really.
Yeah, I would agree with that because really the back half, I think was better done, but just as easily could have been an issue of either Ms. Marvel or Nova, not an Avengers issue. And that the unevenness between the halves I felt was fairly noticeable. And again, that disconnect. But I mean, Waid wrote both of them, and again, he's a terrific writer. I just was expecting less Nova, Ms. Marvel, more Avengers than we got. And you're right, at $5. with what we got, it's really hard to tell people you should go out and buy this. I don't even think it's necessarily the strongest of the current number ones for the Avenger titles we've gotten so far. I'd be frankly a little hard pressed to say which I think is the best of the ones we've gotten of this new batch, but this wasn't it.
No, and it just seemed like leading up to this number one, we expected to see a few more team members in this issue as well. So that was a little bit of a letdown. And so, you know, defying expectations, the extra dollar, uneven story, it all doesn't add up to a positive for me. So it's a little below average experience. So I gave it a C-.
I can understand that. I'm going to go with a C+. I think it, again, had some moments. It had a few. It's got a good creative team. It's got a lot of potential. But when they do things like saying, I don't think there is an Avengers right now, implying that they are going to form that Avengers group, the iconic one, and then don't, it was disappointing. And it may be that in the context of the full opening arc or something, that this turns out to look better in retrospect. But don't got that perspective right now. I expect a lot better out of Wade than I felt we got in this issue. He's, a very talented writer. We see some of that in the backup feature. But with the page count they had, with the price they were charging, with the characters they had access to, this should have knocked our socks off. And clearly it did not. So, disappointing. Shall we move on to our other book?
Yeah.
This is Faster Than Light, number 3 from Image Comics. It's done by Brian Haberlin. He's doing the story and the illustrations, and he also created it with another fellow and stuff. This is a sci-fi comic, kind of a Star Trek-ish sort of a thing, although it's fairly unique. It's not literally just a derivative of Star Trek or something. And there's kind of, I think, two parts of this that are worth talking about. There's the regular comic experience, but then there's the enhanced, how do they phrase it, the augmented reality aspect of it. Starting with just the comic, I thought it was a good kind of fun sci-fi space comic. I don't think there are kind of enough of those out there these days. The story is good, but not brilliant. In a few places, it felt kind of accelerated, like they were just kind of jumping forward without clear scene cuts or whatever, but suddenly it seems like it's a couple of days later or something, and they just glossed over the mechanics of certain things. Like we went to a commercial break and back without noticing. The art, very consistent. It's good. It's not brilliant. There were a few things where it had some aspects that I found a little off-putting or annoying, but I get what they were doing here. To me, the weakness was, again, the story seemed to jump in a few places, and this is one where, I don't want to say a little more decompression or something, but a little better flow in the story would have really helped it. Had you read the prior two issues?
Yeah, I read the first one and didn't do much for me. So I was kind of hoping this one would be a little stronger. It is 32 pages and only $2.99, so I don't know how they do it. They have a full team. They've got editors and colorists and letterers and the same number of pages as Avengers, but $2 less. It's amazing. The art, I get what you're saying on the art. I thought the faces were not the strongest. I think the artist did some great work with some of the ships, some of the space shots, and some of the spaceship shots and interiors. I thought those were pretty strong. But the characters themselves all look very similar.
Yep.
And he had something going on with these big, thick glasses that really were off-putting. They were almost too big for the characters' faces in places. So that was tough. It was tough to tell one character from another, which they all have the same exact uniform on, which I understand, but that's a limitation. It doesn't help in telling characters apart. None of the characters were strongly written enough to where they had a real distinct personality either, and so that they would stand out. So it was really tough to kind of grab on to and get into this story. It hasn't really improved much from that first issue for me. It's really kind of an average comic.
I would agree with that in a lot of respects, because the characters do look an awful lot alike because they're more or less the same character. And what I mean by that is I believe, unless I'm wildly mistaken, a lot of the art of this is done using Poser and some other computer-generated tools. And they've customized it and whatnot and done kind of some digital inking or whatever on top of it. So that's, I think, how they can get the page count they're doing. And it at least looks very comic book-esque, but there are a couple of pages in particular where the 3D origins of the art really jumped out at me.
And I would be able to forgive a lot of that if it was a captivating story.
Yeah.
You know, I can take a lower art in an indier book if the writing is strong. And I didn't feel the writing was strong. So it kind of fell flat in a couple of areas.
Well, and like I said, I think the writing was the weakness on this. I don't think the art was necessarily the great strength, but the fact that they were able to get the pages they did, you know, in other words, 30 pages a story or whatnot here, really helps, and it gives them more room for the story, which is why it's a little more frustrating that sometimes it wasn't as strong as it could have been. I'd love to see a really good tutorial about how they put this kind of book together, because I think the art approach has promise, and I think they're close, but they haven't got a home run here, and it's one of those where, again, I think that makes a big difference. The other thing, though, that sets this book apart is it's got that augmented reality thing. Now, normally I don't bother with that, but I figured, okay, we're reviewing it, I might as well play with it. So I started with the back cover. It's got the URL for where to go get the app to put on the phone. First off, they need a shorter URL. I'm having to type that in on the phone keyboard, and I'm not the best with that. Use Bitly or something, and something to where it's like a really short URL that expands to this. It was really quick to install, really, from the minute I started to having it usable. I think it was literally about less than a minute to install it, get into the app. Then the big loud music with the app starts up. Again, kind of a pet peeve of mine. I don't need blaring sound out of my phone. And I couldn't find a way to really shut that up. So then from there, I went and just started playing around to see what the augmented reality stuff had to offer. Did you do that or no?
No.
Okay. There were five places where you could get stuff. With the front cover, you get a dropship explorer kind of a thing. On page 13, you get the orbital drones, where basically you could launch them out the airlock or whatever and blow them up, which is a little cute or whatever, but got kind of boring kind of quick. On page 18, this doctor guy we get a full image of him and kind of a bio of him and whatnot. So it's kind of like having a Marvel Universe entry embedded in the book, which is kind of cool. The back cover had some mission logs that I didn't really play through, but they're animated or whatnot. So, okay, that's a nice touch. But the one that really impressed me was on page 22, we get to where we can go through the interior of the Discovery ship. And it's got the little two D-pad kind of a things, one for moving, one for changing your viewpoint or whatever. You can wander around the whole damn ship, which I thought was a really impressive feature. Even with that, and having read the comic, I didn't get a good sense for the layout of the ship, because I was trying to find the bridge, and I never seemed to be able to find it, but I probably just didn't wander in the right place. But it's one of those things where these are some really cool features that are absolutely not essential to enjoying the comic, but are nice kind of DVD extras, if you will. So I appreciated that they did that. I think some of the effort they put into that, maybe they should have spent on the book itself to strengthen it. But I certainly think the augmented reality thing is a very interesting twist to go with. I did notice my phone got kind of warm after wandering around inside the ship for a while. I don't know if that's just my phone or if it was the app just doing more than my phone was ready to handle or something. I've got a Samsung Galaxy Note 4. So it's not maybe the state-of-the-art phone, but it's not horrible either. But given that they'd already modeled out the ship for use in putting the comic together, putting it in the thing where I could then go wander through it with the phone, again, you've got the assets, why not use them? So the augmented reality thing, the approach with the art, certainly biased my view a little bit. And I'm going to go with a B on this. I think it's certainly they delivered a lot more than your average comic with the augmented reality and whatnot. I do think, though, if I were editing this book, I would have given it another pass on the story and tried to tighten that up. I would have also tried to differentiate the look of some of these characters, maybe just as simple as the color of their suits or something. Let them personalize that a little bit just to help tell them apart. Because, again, I think your comments of they all blur together, they do. That certainly impacts the accessibility and enjoyability of the story when you're having to stop and think, now, wait, which character is this again?
Yeah, we had a large cast and crew there that we had to get used to. And maybe it would have been better to kind of, you know, leave a couple of guys in the background and just, you know, introduce just a few so that we could, if you can't pull it off visually, maybe strengthen that story so that they get a little stronger and we can tell them apart. But yeah, again, I mean, I applaud their effort, you know, as many pages as the Marvel book, but only $2.99. I like that idea. I think that's great, but it just didn't execute as well as I would have liked. So for me, it comes in as an average comic, so it's a C.
No, I can totally understand that. I do think this approach on the art is, I think, kind of the future of comics in some respects, in so much as it allows you to get a bigger page count out, more consistent art style. You're not beholden to a particular artist. Hey, he gets sick, he can't do it, whatever. But it also comes down with this needed to look, I think, a little bit more like a traditional comic, a little less like it was done through computer art. And really, it comes down to, it doesn't matter how you do the art if you don't have the story rock solid. And this was good, but it was far from great, and that would have been the main thing to focus on in future issues for them. Yeah. I like what they're trying to do, but and Haberlin's not a bad storyteller. It's just, it was a little bland, a little lackluster. It's a competitive market. It needed to knock our socks off, and it didn't.
Hey, this is on your pull list, or is this on the fence?
On the pull list.
Oh.
But I'll admit, half of that is much because of the way they're producing the art. I mean, I've been saying for years, this is essentially the approach I would take. Use Poser, use Daz Studio, use something to allow you to go with more of a either TV studio or animation studio kind of an approach to putting comics together. You know, and a bottled ship, you know, a bottled show in a ship, i.e. something like this. You build that ship, you now have that geometry, that background, that set piece, if you will, for the entire series. I mean, imagine if this were to get fine-tuned and the approach perfected a little to where it looks more or less like what you would get in your average Marvel or DC comic. Nice kind of clean line art style or something like that. Imagine kind of the art style we're getting in Grayson these days. Nice clean style. Now, imagine you've got a 3D model of the Batcave or the bullpen at the Daily Planet or wherever. Avengers Mansion or something that is now just a backdrop. You just move the virtual camera around and it's there ready to be used and rendered into the scene. Suddenly you're not having to have an artist draw all that. You can get more pages out. So I think there's a lot to be said for this approach. I just have yet to see it done in a manner that really knocks it out of the park. I think people have come close. I think certain people have gotten certain aspects better than others, but nobody's really gotten the full package together yet.
Is there a notable series that is using that technology that I would know?
Not that I can swear to. There are a few I suspect.
Okay.
Lazarus is one that I suspect.
Really?
There are aspects of the way some of the characters look that remind me of some of the Poser figures. Now, it could just be Michael Lark's using that as reference, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Bottom line, he's telling a really good story. But as with any reference, it comes down to, are you a slave to it, or are you using it to enhance your art? On Lazarus, I think it's enhancing the art. You go back to, who was the one, I think it was it Bart Sears, over at CrossGen and a few other places, that was just getting, at one point, slammed for how his stuff looked like it was just out of a fashion magazine. And it was beautiful looking art, but it was also a little stiff, a little lifeless, which I think Faster Than Light had in a few places, not many.
Yeah, Greg Land gets that reputation, too.
Yeah, that Greg Land is who I was thinking of, not Bart Sears. Greg Land, that's, yeah. But Haberlin's done a few other hardcovers and whatnot that I've got, and I just haven't had time to read, and I probably will soon, if I can find the time.
Or you just find a really good artist that'll work for cheap. and crank them out.
Even if I did that, would you be able to keep the artist?
Yeah.
And I'd want something that you'd be able to have some consistency with over time. And I think if you do computer-generated art, as well as being able to do that comic book look, you could then do a photorealistic one for your covers. You could do some other stuff for some cool behind-the-scenes features and whatnot. And it would allow you to do things like a backup feature that's just literally a tour of the headquarters or whatever fairly easily. So, or again, the augmented reality, let me wander around the ship. Again, thought that was cool.
Yeah, it is cool. I don't know if I want that in my comics quite yet. It's a different experience, and I don't tend to do that with Walking Dead with their story sync and stuff like that that AMC does. Kind of like my medium the way I like my medium, and I haven't quite embraced some of these additional things.
I agree with that. I tend to be the same way. But what I liked about this with Faster Than Light is you could read the comic and enjoy it regardless of the technology. And the technology just added something to it, something separate, versus trying to turn a comic into something it's not. You know, one of the things I think often goes wrong with digital comics is they're trying to be animation. They're trying to have voiceovers and things like that. And it almost becomes a watered-down cartoon versus an enhanced comic book. So it's a matter of perspective. And I get the reluctance to embrace that, because if some of that stuff makes it no longer a comic in some way, shape, or form. It's different. Not better or worse, but very different sometimes.
Yep.
So, number of other things came out this week. Got all new Hawkeye number one, which seemed to be pretty much picking up right on the heels of the last Hawkeye series we had. Was that also all new Hawkeye?
Yeah, it was.
So this is the second all new Hawkeye this year? Damn it. But it was the first all-new Wolverine this year. That I'm pretty sure of. So yeah, we had some good stuff. A few things that fell a little flat or whatever. I thought the Back to the Future issue this week was better than the first one. Finally got a copy of Jughead number one. Enjoyed that. Thought that was good. The art I didn't think was as good as, obviously, the Fiona Staples stuff in Archie. But it was still a fun read. How about you? You read anything exciting this week?
I read absolutely nothing but the three books that we reviewed.
Busy week, I take it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah, I know how that goes.
And it was a good week. There's a lot of stuff I need to catch up on, so I'm going to be busting butt to get caught up so that I can not also be behind next week.
Yeah, I'm current right now. I've read everything, but not easy. And it's one of those things, if I don't, I get too far behind.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's some great things coming out. Also coming out are solicitations. As we record this, I think Marvel, DC, Image, and Dark Horse, I think, already have their solicitations up over on Comic Book Resources. There's also other places to go find them, no doubt. I'm trying to get the links up there. I really appreciate it when you listeners post the links up there before I see them. That helps me a lot, so thank you everybody for doing that. Clips are going to be due for the next preview spotlight on December 5th. I'm starting to figure out what my picks are going to be and whatnot. I've still got to send in my order for November. I've still got a few days before that's due at DCBS. But looks like we're getting some more number ones and all this stuff. It's just it's hard to keep track of this stuff.
Definitely.
Which, again, that's why I do the preview spotlights. You guys can help me find things that I would otherwise miss. Just a ton of stuff coming out. So, anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
Hey, that'll do it.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Batman Europa number 1 from DC, Mighty Thor number 1 from Marvel, and Huck number 1 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.